Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media Wire, coming at you from the capital. Now, as we were mentioning earlier, today's discussion is almost entirely about the election. Why is the election important to the GLBT community? And there are certainly a lot of things to be said about that. Now, before we talk about some great LGBT candidates, I am going to take a couple of seconds just to talk about some candidates who maybe were in the running and are actually perhaps not all that great. The one that's been currently dominating the headlines over the last day or two has been the Conservative candidate. Let me just grab his name here. Jagdish Grewal, who was the candidate for the Mississauga-Malton area, actually, truth be told, still is, and is still using Conservative signs, despite the Conservative Party saying that, and we quote here directly, "These comments do not reflect the views of the Conservative Party of Canada. We believe that all Canadians, regardless of race, religion, gender or sexual orientation, deserve to be treated with respect and dignity." That is a statement that they released, going on to say that Mr. Grewal is no longer an official candidate for the Conservative Party. And fortunately for the Conservative Party, however, it is too late to have Mr. Grewal's name removed from the voting ballots, he will still be there. Mr. Grewal wrote a editorial in the Punjabi Post early in the year, which he claims has been mistranslated. Whether or not that's true, we'd obviously have to bring in a number of people who are able to translate Punjabi, but it appears that within this, he wrote that psychologists in some cases blame a shock during childhood for causing a person to become gay, and that this particular incident can be corrected. This was in response to the provincial bill to block support of conversion therapies, as there has been significant backlash. The long-lasting damage, psychological damage, that conservative therapies have done to folks is well documented, and is a major point of contention within the LGBT community. This perspective, is very... He referred to the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice and Scientific Integrity, which sounds great, but just to give you an idea of kind of where they're coming from, this was in the Globe and Mail, and they offer therapies for unwanted homosexual attractions, and their documentaries covering the damage that this does to people psychologically are a dime a dozen, and can be rather harrowing. So if you do want to look into this, please do so with some discretion. This, of course, is not really a therapy that is exercised here in Canada, thankfully, and in particular is not being exercised in Ontario. So this was a recent comment made, of course, of the bill that came out earlier in the year, but he no longer is a part of the party. He may still be elected, in which case the decision of whether or not he would like to stand as an independent or to resign would, of course, be a decision entirely up to himself. Of course, that's assuming that he becomes elected, given that his position on this has been made public. But he's not the only one to be caught with public opinions that go contrary to a welcoming environment, to say the least, for LGBT people. There was an NDP, actually a couple of NDP examples, of the NDP candidate Harbhajit Singh Kaloon told a TV program in 2005, he was speaking to his position on gay marriage, in terms of homosexuality, his positions he has apologized, apparently, is what people are saying. And Tom Mulcair, accepted that apology. This is his decision that he made. We're talking 7 years ago now. Wait, no, 2005. 10 years ago. Gosh, my math is terrible. 10 years is a long time. And I do believe that some people can have a change of heart. Perhaps they get a closer or better understanding of a topic. Actually, that's a good question to folks. Where does your position on gay marriage or equal rights for trans folks, where does that sit today compared to what you thought about in 2005? Would has your opinion changed over the last 5 years? Be sure to let us know and kind of let us know why. What happened over the last, actually 10 years, you know, decade is a long time. What's happened to kind of really change your thinking on that? Or is your position the same? And it'll be an interesting conversation to have. If you recall, last week we were discussing with Annie about the positions in Saudi Arabia, position of Saudi Arabia against LGBT rights. And what was interesting was that the Supreme Court of Canada, Supreme Court of the US, sorry, decision has had a very substantial impact. So did that have an impact on your positions on these issues? And more importantly, has your position changed? More pro or perhaps more against LGBT rights? You let us know. Tune in and let us know. Or send a tweet at Velvet Studio One. We are paying close attention to our Twitter feed to see what kind of happens out of there. There is, of course, another NDP candidate, Reverend K.M. Shanti Kumar, who has very strong positions around abortion and same-sex marriage. However, will vote along the NDP lines on those issues. So that's an interesting one. You know, are you voting for somebody to vote along the lines of the political party, or on a vote of conscience? This came up recently in Australia and in the UK, where votes of conscience is where they aren't enforced whips, meaning that each individual MP can vote as their heart dictates or as they wish to represent their writings on moral questions where the party they belong to would not enforce a solid line. So this has come up most frequently globally in relation to the gay marriage debate or decriminalization of consenting homosexual sex. So yeah, no, it's an interesting one. I think that this particular, the Scarborough Rouge Park candidate gives a very good example of, you know, do people with these views, are you voting for the person with that view, or are you voting for the political party, and what difference does that make? Which kind of brings me quite nicely to openly gay political candidates. So Rob Solano of Daily Extra has written a fantastic piece. It's titled, "With a Record Number of LGBT Candidates Running, What Can We Expect of Queer Politicians?" It's worth checking out. It was published just at the very end of September, so it's not entirely out of date. Last year, in the last parliamentary session, there were 5 openly gay federal MPs, which is one down from the parliament before it, which of course had, which would have been 6 then. However, we are looking at around 21, I believe, candidates this year, which is fantastic news, of course, that we're seeing a great increase in the number of people who 21 openly LGBT candidates, who feel that they can come forward and being gay is not a hindrance. In some markets like Vancouver, Toronto, Edmonton, Montreal, you know, that makes sense. These are large urban areas. But we're also seeing places like Red Deer, Regina, Saskatoon, St. John's, or even rural ridings in BC, Quebec, Newfoundland, and Nova Scotia. Actually, in Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, we'll be seeing the first openly trans ballot, which is a trans person on the ballot, which is an incredibly exciting time to be living in, where Canada is such a welcoming place that people are able to become leaders within our society without condition on their sexuality, which is a great great position to be in, and I think that really speaks to Rob's point here about why is it important to have openly gay LGBT MPs. I mean, for the most part, these people just vote as the party votes, as in fact most MPs do, you know, and if not, they're voting on really local stuff like fishing or, you know, things that relate to their specific riding. Because, after all, there is no, like, riding of just homosexuals. I know a few with a lot of them in it, but that's not the point. So people, these MPs, all these 21 of them, are being elected to represent the community rather broadly. So can we expect them to represent the LGBT community as well? We know that historically, over the last few parliaments, these candidates have been very reluctant to be the flag-waving flag bearers of the LGBT community and have, generally speaking, voted on other stuff. But that's not to say they haven't. Philip Toon voted for the striking criminal records of the old sodomy laws. And then we have Danny Morin, who also was with the bill around cyberbullying. And, of course, there's another one about ending the blood ban and civil marriages. I think Randall Garrison was important in that one. So we do see quite a bit of leadership. And Tara Danforth, Craig Scott with, I believe, C279. But that's... Actually, no, it was Randall Garrison was... it was one or the other, I forget which one, but it'll come to me. But the what he notes in this article, which I think is particularly interesting, is that the people who are taking, in some cases, the strongest steps for equal LGBT rights in Canada is also straight allies. In particular, he points to Vancouver Centre MP Hedy Fry, which, given Vancouver Centre, is hardly surprising. Their LGBT community there is very, very prominent and well organized and certainly active in pushing for support there. And I believe that she had bills regarding trans rights and on cyberbullying, as well as advocating for sex workers. So these are all issues that very much pertain to the LGBT community. So what do you think? Do you think it's important that we have out LGBT candidates? For example, is it important to have candidates with your religion that you have on in Parliament? One of the arguments is that when the other MPs are discussing whether or not to, let's use C279, for example, when there is a conversation on whether or not to pass a bill supporting trans rights, having a trans MP to be able to, you know, it's a lot of this has to do with knowing somebody, having somebody they can identify with, although that in turn is tokenistic, but having someone there to kind of fight that corner may be very beneficial. But then, like I said, it could be tokenistic. It's definitely a difficult question, and one that each and every one of these 21 openly gay, lesbian, bi, trans candidates will have to kind of really discuss, and hopefully we'll see an increase in representation this year, at least up from the 5, which of course, as I mentioned, was a drop in the previous year, but we'll see how that goes. Now, before we hit the end of the show, there is a lot of areas where this is of importance. For example, HIV criminalization is an area where it overtly affects the LGBT community. Access to the arts, LGBT homelessness. Of course, if you're homeless, you're disproportionately a member of the gay, bi, lesbian, or trans community. Quite substantially disproportionate. We're also looking at C279 and what happens next with a new government. Who comes in next, and what do they say on that? So, yeah, there's a lot of issue areas of major concern to LGBT folks. But also, of course, there's normal, just everyday people areas of concern. As we mentioned in a previous episode, Ottawa has, 15% of adoption cases in Ottawa are to same-sex couples. So these are people settling down with families and, you know, so it's not to pigeonhole the LGBT community as voting only to LGBT issues, because, of course, you know, they're families, they're hardworking folks, just like everybody else. But there are certain contexts where it might be a different game. One area where there is a LGBT lens which can be applied is to what has been a big hot topic in this election, is the refugee crisis. As we've done in a previous episode, when we interviewed Maurice Tomlinson, we talked about some of what's causing that. And we've seen 20 civil society organizations, such as the AIDS Committee of Ottawa, the AIDS Committee of Toronto, the Canadian Centre for Gender and Sexually Diverse Communities, the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, a lot of people have come together to form what they are calling the Dignity Initiative, which was born out of the World Pride events that happened in Toronto, and it really is to promote Canada's international reputation and actionable items in terms of their global responsibility. What's interesting by their call, they released a call, and it's worth looking at. They have 22 recommendations, I think, yes, 22 recommendations, which range from, 21 is broaden private sponsorship programs to include countries with high levels of LGBTI persecution. That's a great initiative. And then there's other ones such as, actually these are really rather lengthy, so I won't read them all out. Reduce wait times for private sponsorship applications so that the applicants can arrive in less than 1 year. So it's really about, applying more supports to refugees, using diplomatic pressure to kind of promote LGBT rights in countries where that may not be at the top of their list, enhance funding to organizations who are doing work on that, and reaching out to activists and human rights organizers. We know that the NDP have pretty much wholeheartedly jumped on board with this, as have, there's been of course some support from the Liberals and the Greens as well. Unfortunately, when this was released, the Conservative Party didn't send somebody to that particular debate and was not available for comment, which is where this information is coming from. So we don't know the Conservative Party position on this. However, this is really speaking to increased support for refugees and the like. So the Dignity Initiative, be sure to check it out. It should be a very interesting angle on the refugee crisis as we know it. Do you find that we have, this has been a very much a colossal run through of issues as they pertain to the LGBT community in this election? If you feel that we've missed anything or would like to have a different perspective here, do you let us know? You contact us at Velvet Studio One over Twitter or here at the station, and we'll be sure to speak to it in our next episode where there is available. Coming up to play us out, of course, we got David Ellen last on the other side of the hour. Coming up, we have Kaiser Stronger, which is from the soundtrack to Finding Neverland. It's actually one of my favorite songs, and it's of course a little bit Canadian, so of course that needed to happen today, because every day is CanCon Day, if you ask me. Anyways, thank you so much, and we'll be back just after this. I'm on my own, and the road ahead, I must walk on.